Dr. Nicole Lepera.
I have no energy. I have no motivation. I might be sad. My energy is heavy and low and my mood is sad. And then we say, well, I'm depressed. Mm. And in reality, we might not be depressed at all. Our nervous system might be having a very healthy reaction to consistent overwhelming stress that we feel is inescapable or unavoidable. When we don't share what's going on, when we don't say, you know, I'm changing, I'm not going to be available in these ways anymore, or I'm thinking and feeling this new way, which might even be positive, whatever it is, we leave so much open for interpretation. So if we don't do that, instead we just ghost someone or vanish or stop returning their calls, much like in childhood, that person's going to wonder what happened and their mind is going to create their own narrative about what happened.
Hej och välkommen till Hälsorevolutionen, podden som vill få dig att leva starkt och autentiskt. Och precis det här ska vi prata mer om i det här avsnittet, där vi för andra gången får möta en av våra idoler, den världskända holistiska psykologen Nicole Lepera. Jag heter Maria Borelius, är vetenskapsjournalist och författare och biolog.
Ja, Carina Lundstedt heter jag och jag är förläggare och producent. I somras hade vi förmånen att få möta Nicole Lepera första gången. Det var du som ledde det magiska samtalet, Maria. Det är avsnitt 105 om någon har missat detta och vill lyssna på det först. Det var helt fantastiskt. Och nu ska jag få samtala med Nicole igen som är på besök i Sverige. Vi ska bland annat prata om den enorma community av självläkare som hon har byggt upp. Hon har 6,4 miljoner följare på Instagram. Hon har även en podd och har ju skrivit nu 2 böcker. Och varför är det så att många behöver hjälp att sätta gränser för sin hälsa och göra upp med gamla mönster och läka känslomässiga skador för att må bra? Att lära sig att gå från panikläge, fight or flight, från att bara överleva till att leva. Mm. Ja, hur minns du det första samtalet som vi hade med Nicole Lepera, Maria?
Nej, men jag kom ju in i det lite starstruck, för att jag är sån här som blir starstruck av innehåll, därför att jag tyckte hennes bok som vi pratade om då var så bra. Och jag tyckte liksom, jag brinner ju för det här helhetstänket kring människan. Hon fick ihop vår biologi med vår psykologi och gör det på så smart och nytt sätt. Så det är det att till och med hon är liksom väldigt vis människa. Mm. Vad tänkte du?
Ja, Läk dig själv heter boken på svenska, på engelska, How to do the work. Så här lät det när vi sammanfattade det första samtalet. Det är ju inte det att man måste vara fullständigt trasig för att läka sig själv, utan jag tror vi måste läka oss själva lite varje dag. Och jag tar verkligen med mig det här med, jag menar så att det här är ju alltså mindfulness 2.0 tycker jag nästan. För det är mer, man får mer vetenskap, ännu mer sammanhang. Mm. Och att connecta med sig själv och känna hur, ja.
Jag tycker hon svarade väldigt bra. Att man kan få hjälp av diagnoser, men man är inte sen diagnos. Ja.
När jag tog med mig så mycket, det var verkligen ett av de avsnitt som kan ha påverkat mig mest, för att det är så, hon sätter fingret liksom på så mycket i vårt samhälle. Mm. Vad tycker du att jag inte ska missa och fråga Nicole om nu?
Alltså, hon gjorde en post på Instagram här för några veckor sedan och den var helt fantastisk, och den handlade om hur man ska gå från sitt känsloläge till sin förnuftiga människa. Vi har ju pratat mycket om schimpansen och människan här.
Ja, ja.
Så liksom egentligen hur man flyttar sig själv ur schimpansen. Just. Och det handlar ju om att identifiera sina trigger points. De här såriga ytan vi alla har på huden. Och när någon trycker rakt på det. Mm. Och istället för att bli en exploderande vulkan. Mm. Eller sur eller passive aggressive eller vad vi håller på med. Att kunna gå undan och lugna sig själv.
Ja.
Och det här tycker jag hon har så himla bra handfasta tekniker för.
Mm.
Och jag tycker att det här är så viktigt liksom. För att vi är ett samhälle där vi nu håller på att säga att ens känslor är det viktigaste. Men om alla bara reagerar på sina känslor, då blir vi alla schimpanser. De reagerar bara på känslor. Mm. Så känslor är viktigt, ja.
Mm.
Man ska lyssna på det, det är varningssignaler, det är information. Men man behöver inte alltid agera på det.
Det tror jag är så viktigt, verkligen.
Så det, att höra lite med henne om Liksom, hur ser ett samhälle ut där alla bara går omkring och agerar på sina känslor och inte medvetna om
väldigt dem. Transparent hela tiden. Det kan bli...
Det blir otroligt ryckigt för barn. Tänk om vi bara exploderar så fort. Nu har du trampat på mina tår. Istället för att gå undan, andas, fundera. Varför var det där mina tår som blev trampade på? Vad har hänt med mig tidigare i livet?
Nej, men att vara både en självläkare och en självledare på samma gång.
Bra uttryckt. Bra uttryckt. Så det här med trigger points, tekniker för det. Och jag såg när hon la ut den här posten liksom.
Ja, exploderar.
Det exploderar därför att vi förstår alla vad det är. Mm. När vi reagerar på trigger points. Mm. Och när vi klarar att gå undan och andas. Och när jag hade fått den här posten så fick jag precis en trigger point i mitt privatliv.
Ja,
och det gjorde jag precis som Nicole sa.
Alltså det är
och sen kom jag tillbaka med en annan energi.
Ja.
Och allt löstes på en minut.
Ja. Jag måste dela ett annat inlägg som var på hennes feed här häromdagen. It's okay if you need to disappear and work on yourself. Så hon menar att man ibland, det allra bästa, just kanske inte för att bara hälla ut på alla andra. Så ska man liksom tänka att man faktiskt kan dra sig undan ett tag. Om jobbet, familjen och så vidare tillåter att man skapar sig ett utrymme. Så här skriver hon vidare. It's okay to take a break from life as you know it. To learn who you actually are. Mm. You spent a lifetime pleasing other people. This time is for you. The people you want in your life will understand and welcome the new version of you. Mm. It doesn't mean you need to quit your job, move to a new country or delete social media. It just means you go into a cocoon phase. So cocooning.
Bra.
You'll be different. You'll be a different person when you return. You're worth it. Det är fint.
Väldigt fint. Ah.
Vi ska kokuna mer med oss själva.
Med mig själva. Ah. Och vad jag gjorde med den här triggerpointen kom. Det var att jag satte på mina hörlurar. Skrev några tacksamhetsgrejer. Och lyssnade på lite bra musik. I 4 minuter.
Ah.
Och hon skriver väldigt bra i den här posten. Det är precis det. Och det var min retreat.
Ja.
Det var,
nej, det måste ju inte vara någon liksom...
Det behöver inte vara åka på yogaläger i Umbrien. Mm. Även om det är det Carina och jag ska
alltså
göra.
Jag har fått en sån fantastisk julklapp av Maria. Nu kan vi inte hålla oss. Nu måste vi berätta. Ja. För jag tror inte jag har sagt det här innan. Nej. Jag har liksom, det är en overklig julklapp.
Nej, men du är värd det bästa, Carina.
Ja, men det är ett retreat... Mm. På ett gammalt kloster i Umbrien. Mm. Och det är vattenfall och fantastisk natur.
Vi ska vara tysta och vi ska skaka och vi ska yoga och vi ska...
Kokuna.
Och fundera. Ja. Och vi kommer podda därifrån också.
Ja. Ja, vi kommer dela med oss.
Men att kunna self-soothe, pratar hon om det. Att kunna vara föräldrar till oss själva. När vi, och förstå varför blev jag triggad. Jag går undan.
Mm.
Och jag kan också känna... När kan jag komma tillbaka? Så att jag istället för att vräka ur sig de här grejerna. Du är alltid så himla. Det är som att komma tillbaka värdigt.
Ja, ja.
Det är skönt alltså när man klarar det.
Men det är ju så, det beror ju på lite hur man har vuxit upp. Som jag, min pappa som tyvärr inte lever längre. Han hade ofta problem med sitt humör. Mm. Och det var liksom hans reaktion som var den viktigaste.
Ja.
Och vi gick ofta runt med filttofflor och var rädda för att han liksom skulle bli triggad och bli arg hela tiden. Och det där är ju ganska vanligt.
Så var det i min familj med min mamma. Hon exploderade lätt. Mm. Och det är ju så att människor som är volatila skapar också rädsla hos barn. Mm. Va? Därför att man går liksom, ska det hända nu? Och så börjar man plisa. Och försöka tänka, nu ska jag undvika att det händer. Så det här, orkar man lära sig att ta hand om det här själv, så är man ju en välsignelse för andra människor också.
Mm. Mm.
Och så känner man sig så klok när man har lyckats vara en Nicole Perra-människa.
Ja.
Eller hur? Men vad kul, det ska bli så spännande att lyssna på det här nu.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Den här veckan så fortsätter vi vårt roliga sponsrade samarbete med Skinome, färsk hudvård. Produkter helt utan konserveringsmedel och andra onödiga tillsatser. Det här är ett svenskt hudvårdsföretag grundat av hudforskaren Dr. Johanna Gillbro. Och idag ska vi fortsätta prata om Skinomes innovativa solskyddsprodukter, eller hur Maria?
Ja, vi gillar ju båda att njuta av solen, liksom de flesta svenskarna. Solen är ju inte bara en källa till glädje och värme och ljus. Den är ju också vår främsta naturliga källa till D-vitamin, och det mår vi ju bra av. Och som alla vet kan för mycket solexponering medföra risker på grund av solens ultravioletta strålar, det vi kallar UV-strålning. Vi vet hur viktigt det är att skydda huden på bästa sätt. Och både Carina och jag har börjat använda Skinomes solskydd Sun Emulsion.
Ja, vår sponsor Skinome erbjuder två solskydd med olika solskyddsfaktor. Dels Sun Emulsion SPF 50+, och så den senaste nyheten Sun Emulsion SPF 30. Och båda de här ansiktsprodukterna går att använda som enda dagkräm om man vill, då de också innehåller både vårdande och återfuktande ingredienser samt prebiotika som stärker ditt mikrobiom.
Tänk på att applicera rikligt med solkräm just i ansiktet. Förutom att stärka skyddet mot cancer så kan du också minska risken för UV-inducerade ålderstecken. Och då talar vi om rynkor, pigmentfläckar och brustna blodkärl. Skinomes senaste nyhet, Sun Emulsion Solskyddsfaktor 30, innehåller också en innovativ ingrediens från den svenska västkusten. Vi talar om algika som tillverkas just av alger. Studier visar att algika förstärker den solskyddande effekten av UV-filter och skyddar huden mot miljörelaterade luftföroreningar.
Ja, det här är innovativt. Skinomes solkrämer passar både barn och vuxna, även de med känslig hud. Om du blir osäker på om du ska ha solskyddsfaktor 50 eller 30, så kan du gå in på Skinomes hemsida och göra deras solskyddstest. Just nu så kan du prova Skinomes solskydd och övriga hudvårdsprodukter extra förmånligt. Med koden Hälsorevolutionen 20 så får du 20% rabatt under april månad. Rabatten gäller inte på redan nedsatta varor. Gå in på skinome.com och beställ den nya generationen solskydd.
Dr. Nicole LePera, welcome back to the podcast Health Revolution, Hälsorevolutionen.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be back.
We are so happy and grateful to be able to do this second episode with you. And this time it's live in the Acast studio here in Stockholm. And we are here to talk about your game-changing work through your podcast, your own podcast, and also through your platform, Instagram platform, and your game-changing book, How to Do the Work. Recognize your patterns, heal from your past, and create yourself. And the Swedish title is Läk dig själv. Hur känslomässiga skador får stora konsekvenser och hur du kan befria dig från dem. What is your impression of Stockholm and Sweden so far?
It's beautiful from what I've seen. I'm just in yesterday, so I got to see a little bit. I'm looking forward to this weekend and being able to explore around.
Wow. And why are you in Europe? You live in Arizona, right?
Yes, I live in Arizona. And actually, this is the first time I've had the opportunity to travel in several years after COVID. So really, this is my first time out in the community. And I'm really honestly grateful that it had happened that my first foray into live things is in Europe. There's so much of my community, both in my membership and outside of my membership, that is international. So I love the opportunity to connect with them and to start all of this fun here.
And you have so many millions of followers, 6.4 or 6.5 to be exact. And your book has spread all over the world, right?
Yeah, it's been mind-blowing. To me, that really speaks to, I think, the universal struggle that so many of us are finding ourselves in.
Yeah.
And also the universal path to healing. And I think it's just such a beautiful thing to see so many of us coming together to have these conversations. I mean, the fact that this many people, 6 million, care to talk about healing and trauma. And it's just mind-blowing to me. And at the same time, I got chills as soon as I said that because it's so inspirational. Because to me, that really is a testament, I think, to the power of us as humans to heal, to create change. And in my opinion, that's exactly what we're doing.
And the power of sharing.
Yes.
That's so, so strong. But could you imagine when you started everything then 5 years ago, started this kind of launch of your book and your Instagram account? What was your picture, your hope and dreams?
Oh, gosh, I would have never. It really began for me, that Instagram account itself, began for me as an exercise in my own healing journey. There was a lot of fear and uncertainty about what it would turn into, and a lot of relief when I was seeing that resonance. I was able to myself feel a lot less alone in my journey, but I wouldn't have ever anticipated, flash forward in time, even having the opportunity to write a book. It was never something that really crossed my mind as a possibility, let alone be in Europe promoting a book, talking to someone like yourself. So I'm shocked. And still to this day, as the community grows, as opportunities continue to come my way, there's still a surprised little girl inside of me that's like, wait, really? You want to talk to me? You care about what I have to say?
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm not surprised because you're so spot on. It's so easy to recognize yourself in your different kind of steps that you share with us, and so many, not easy, but no, they're very hard insights sometimes. Yes. And authentic, that's a key word for you. And I mean, the world today in social media, it's not always so authentic. It's very, I mean, it's focusing quite a lot on how shall we look? How shall we appear? So how can we balance this journey to find ourselves in both the inner world and the outer world?
Yes. I think social media, while it absolutely provides us with that constant point of comparison, now we have millions of people to scroll and, you know, feel not as attractive as or not as fit as or whatever it is that we're concerned about. I don't necessarily think it's anything new per se. I mean, many of us were not doing that online. We were worrying about what the neighbors think or
what
car we have compared to what they have. So again, I don't think it's really introduced something new. I think it's just introduced the constant access to comparing ourselves to others, which, to speak to your very beautiful point, does lead us to present a different self to the world or to wear a mask or to play a role. Though, again, I don't think that that's necessarily anything new.
No, we have always done that in school, for example.
Exactly. And I think the large majority of us, or I should say, I think very few of us are truly our authentic selves, even, and I'll just speak from my own personal journey, in our closest, most intimate relationships. I came to realize how much I didn't really share what my perspectives were, even with my closest of partners, even my emotions. You know, I really suppressed what I was really feeling, usually for me, out of concern for how my feelings would impact you. What will you feel if I share with you that what you did upset me, or that I don't want to do what you want to do tomorrow? And a lot of expectation and worries about disappointment, for me, led me to wear the mask of always trying to be the people pleaser, do the yes person. And I think that is one version of a mask. And I believe that most of us are doing that, which is why very few of us truly feel seen, truly feel connected, and truly feel like we're in fulfilling relationships. Because how could we be? If we're not truly sharing authentically who we are, what we think, what we're feeling, what we want, desire, I mean, the list goes on, then we're not giving people the opportunity to truly know us. So to speak to your point of how do we navigate all of that, so I'll always break it down into the two steps of becoming conscious, What are the habits? What are the patterns? What's the mask I'm wearing? Yeah. What role am I playing? Yeah. Yeah. Am I the yes person or, you know, a people pleaser? Like, am I an overachiever? What am I doing that's not authentic? So that we can begin to take the second step of change, which is, as simple as it sounds, making new choices, not playing that role, not making that mask. Instead of suppressing what I really think or what I really feel, actually courageously sharing what I think or what I really feel. So until we understand, I think, and become aware of how inauthentic so many of us are being for very understandable reasons, this isn't a moment to shame ourselves. Chances are it served us to modify ourselves, to suppress our real desires. Chances are there was a time and a place where we need it to do that. Though as an adult now, we can begin to see when we're doing that. So we can begin to then take that second step, make new choices that are more closely honoring what it is really authentically for us.
Honor ourselves. Yes. So that's really beautiful. And I think actually I need to jump right into one of the questions from our listeners. Thank you, all of you who send questions for us, and we will share some of them. And since you mentioned the problem to be a people pleaser, which I think almost everybody can relate to, I have one question. One of our listeners, Tia, writes about boundaries. Where do you start? How do I learn to feel when people cross my boundaries? As a people pleaser, I feel totally blind, she says.
So I'm relating to you, Tia, and all the other people pleasers out there. If I'm being fully honest, it wasn't ever even a word that I heard, not in my personal life, any readings that I've done in terms of my own self-development necessarily. What I came to realize is one of the big reasons I never heard of a boundaries is because I had none. I constantly overstepped. So simple way to even define what a boundary is, it's a limit. Sometimes, you know, a limit in terms of what our physical abilities are. Do I have enough energetic resources? Am I sleeping enough? Am I eating well? Can I actually physically show up in the way that I need to? And or is something in my physical environment overstepping my limit, so I'm not feeling safe? Are you getting too close to me? Are you violating my physical body in a lot of ways? And of course, then we have emotional boundaries, creating space between my emotions and someone else's emotions. And I think you even heard a little bit of when I was sharing why I didn't share my feelings with people, because I was afraid my feelings would bleed into someone else. That really illustrates, I think, that lack of boundaries.
When you don't want to disturb other people.
When we don't have a separation between, I can feel one way and express that to you and hold space for the possibility that you might feel a different way. Creating limits between what we're saying, what we're doing, and allowing someone else to have their own separate reaction. So we have to see what's not working so that then we can begin to define, and it will take a little bit of experimentation to define then where our new boundaries need to go, and then allow ourselves to, I think, embrace the reality that it will be difficult. When we show up differently in whatever relationship it is, when we say no as opposed to the yes that we've always said, at minimum, we're going to surprise this person who's likely came to expect a yes. And then, of course, that person might have another reaction based on now our limit that we've set for ourselves. So this is one of those areas where we know it's healthy, so we're setting new limits. And while we're doing it, it's really difficult. It's uncomfortable to set these new limits that will over time end up benefiting not only us, the relationship itself.
You have to learn a new pattern.
You have to learn a new pattern. That's the thing. I think sometimes, especially, we think logically, oh, well, new space of safety, you know, new ability to say how I really feel and allow someone else to feel however they feel about it. That logically should be easy. I'll feel better when I do this. And this is another one of those areas where you don't necessarily feel better first. You feel bad, you feel guilty, you know, you feel upset that you hurt someone or about their reaction. And over time, you'll begin to feel better because you'll have that space for yourself.
We often talk about health boundaries here in the podcast. And Maria used the expression to be your own parent. We learn a lot of things when we grow up, and then we expose ourselves to friends in school and at the workplace, and think, oh, that's the way of doing it, or that's the way of doing it. We compare too much instead of really, as you say, ground ourselves and feel what is important for me and for my health. What are your most important health boundaries?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we're talking about becoming our own parent, what you're really highlighting is the reality that we're all carrying with us the habits of our early environments. Mm. Those habits that so many of us learned in childhood don't serve us. So the major kind of body-based, health-based habits and boundaries that I learned from childhood was not really to care for my body at all. All of the messaging in my childhood environment was really around sickness and symptom management as opposed to health and wellness. Growing up with a chronically ill mom who struggled with chronic pain in particular, you know, she spent a lot of time in bed managing the symptoms of her pain. Most conversations about health in my family were worries, health-related concerns, an emphasis on not getting this particular disease as opposed to living in a well way. So not surprisingly, I continued on focusing on achievement, focusing on what everyone else wanted or needed of me. And the byproduct of that in my early 20s, late 20s, was my body started to become exhausted, started to shut down. Because what I wasn't doing for all of those years, or what I was doing, I should say, was caring for my body in the exact same way I knew, right? Which was very minimally and just holding on tight, waiting for when my body would become sick. Until, of course, I learned about the body. I learned how incredibly important care for our body and our nervous system is for our mental wellness. So now, to answer your question more directly, I have daily commitment to care for my body, which for me is making sure that I'm getting the sleep I need. Sleep, you know, is so incredibly important. Making sure that I'm eating nutrient-dense foods. Making sure for me, another one that's really up there in priority is moving or stretching my body, because I've carried so much stress and tension from neglecting my body, from not knowing how to deal with my own stress, that it's now housed in my body. So that is a daily commitment. Again, another area where that daily commitment, even to this day, doesn't come easy. I still have the tendency, especially now, I'm here, I'm touring around, I'm doing a lot of work. These are the moments where it's so easy for me to shift into that neglecting mode. Why? Because work needs me, achievement needs me, someone else is expecting something of me.
Everybody else is more important.
Everyone is more important than me. I know logically, though, that my physical vessel needs to be, you know, in a balanced, you know, grounded state so that I can be fully attentive, give someone my presence, have my thoughts, and enter this flow state. So I know that logically, though in action, it's so tempting to prioritize just being there, you know, just showing up, just getting here on time instead of taking the extra couple minutes to care for my body.
And maybe someone else can fix it in a way.
Yes.
I have... as the listeners know, I lost my husband in cancer 1.5 years ago. So, and then when you have a person to care about who is very, very sick, you're always alert and ready to wake up and fix whatever needs to be. So I think I'm still a little bit in that alert mode, and I can see it and I understand it. But now when I'm doing better and better together with my kids and all the beautiful people that I work with and the beautiful life that I have, then I can also care better for myself.
Yes.
And the feeling when you really care for yourself, it's really so rewarding, I think. Yeah.
I think, thank you for sharing all of that with me. And, you know, I think what you're describing actually beautifully illustrates the nervous system in a stressed state. When you have someone that you love deeply, that, you know, whose health is in balance, right? It's no surprise that you were on alert all of the time, because there was a legitimate constant threat, their health, in your physical proximity that you were in care of. So it's not surprising your nervous system went into that fight or flight mode, where it is that scanning of the environment, where you can hear almost every creak in your house at night because maybe it is your partner or your husband, whoever it is, right, getting up and needing you. So you're jumping up. And unfortunately, that doesn't just go away when the stress ends, when that's no longer present, when loss in this instance happens. Your nervous system just doesn't register, oh, well, there's no need to do that anymore. And that's a beautiful example of what so many of us, the cycle that we could live in for decades, if not our whole life. We've never left the stress of our childhood. We've never taught. And again, this is one of those moments where coming from a traditional program in the West, where we learned cognitive behavioral therapy being the gold standard, as it's called, this idea of change the way you're thinking, change the way you feel, change what you do. Now, I'm not going to minimize the power of our thoughts because they're incredibly powerful. A whole chapter in the book is dedicated to the power of belief, right? Which are based in first our thinking mind. However, I think a lot of us who've been, you know, told to just think differently or practice even affirmations or even in these moments, right, reminding yourself that you are no longer, you know, at in need or needed by this person. They're not here anymore. You can relax. We can tell ourselves that until we're blue in the face. Unless our body begins to unravel from all of that stress, then that's not going to override the messages that our body is giving us. So it really is important to begin to shift then through sleep, through commitment. And we don't then immediately feel better, though over time when we are tending to our body will begin to release stress. So thank you for sharing this. I think it really does illustrate what so many of us are carrying and why I think so many of us get frustrated when we can't just think our way to peace. We can't just think our way to happiness because our body might be sending sometimes the completely opposite message to our brain.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'm just nodding here. And I don't think you need to have a sick parent or a sick husband or even to be sick yourself. The stress levels in our society are insane. Yes. Fight or flight is, as you say, the most common response to a traumatic or stressful experience. What is the alternative to fight or flight?
So we all of our nervous systems, if you're human and if you're listening, our nervous systems will go through the same process. Anytime where we perceive a threat in our environment, I'm emphasizing that because it doesn't necessarily mean, right, there has to be an active threat present. Though if we are feeling unsafe in any way, our nervous system will go through the same sequence of events. So when there's a threat, the first attempt we try to do is either fight it, overcome the threat. And to do that, our blood needs to be pumping. So our heart begins to quicken. Our heart rate's going up. Our body temperature might be going up. Our breathing might quicken as a result. And I have all this tension and energy in my muscles ready to overcome the threat because that's what we're attempting to do. When that isn't possible, if the threat is too big, is impossible to overcome, then the next thing I'll do is I'll try to flee. I'll try to run using that same energy and activation in my body. I'll get the heck out of there so that I can find a safety around the other corner, leave the room.
I get on the next plane.
Shut down. If I'm having a difficult conversation with my partner and it's starting to overwhelm me, I might just turn around, give them the silent treatment, start scrolling on my phone. I'm very intentional with these actions that I'm describing because on the receiving end of them, it can feel very, what are you, ignoring me? I need to talk right now. What's happening in reality, though, is the person who's scrolling on the phone or giving the silent treatment or running away, leaving the room because they have a work call or whatever it might be, is feeling unsafe. And they're using that flee mechanism, trying to get back to safety. The final stop on the journey, and this is what I lived for many years of, if the threat is too overwhelming, if it is inescapable, which for us in childhood is the large majority of the time, we're dependent. We can't leave our home. Oh, we need these caregivers to continue to feed us, to keep us physically alive. So if that happens, especially in childhood or any moment where we can't flee, what'll happen is our nervous system will shut down. We'll go into what's called a dorsal state of nervous system activation. And quite like, I think a lizard is the common animal when you think of playing dead, or I don't know, maybe dogs do it, but this idea of mimicking death so that this threat, possible threat, will look and determine that we're not a threat anymore and they'll leave. So that, instead of our energy being mobilized and tension in our body, actually looks like our energy becomes depleted. Our heart rate might slow. Our breath might become so shallow. Some of us even begin to hold our breath. And a lot of times when we don't have that then energy, we feel listless. We feel hopeless. We feel unmotivated. We can't get up off the couch. And this is a great moment where we shame ourselves. We wonder what's wrong with us. Why can't we do anything? For me, we feel really disconnected. We might feel numb from our emotions. We might feel out of our body completely, like we're in a room and talking to someone, but we're somewhere else. And that really describes what I call my spaceship. So that's the final stop on the journey. So I just wanted to share that again, because I think it really does map on to symptoms that we're experiencing. That shutdown state a lot of times can be called depression, right? I have no energy. I have no motivation. I might be sad. My energy is heavy and low and my mood is sad. And then we say, well, I'm depressed. And in reality, we might not be depressed at all. Our nervous system might be having a very healthy reaction to consistent overwhelming stress that we feel is inescapable or unavoidable. So we've now shut down out of protection. And I lived decades of that without even realizing that was what was causing my lack of memories, my lack of my numb feeling, my disconnected feeling in my emotion and my relationships was coming from a very real state of disconnection, because my nervous system did what it needed to do back at a time where there was consistently overwhelming stress and a lack of support by the caregivers around me.
So pay attention to the feelings and the patterns that not serve you.
Yes.
That's the most important. Yeah.
So pay attention to, how you're, and again, if you're like me, you might not be able to locate how you're feeling yet. Mm-hmm. So beginning to pay attention to your patterns. When is it likely that you're going to be disconnected? You know, those patterns will help you. And then in that moment of choice, so I came to the realization that I'm disconnected more or less all of the time. I'm dissociated. I'm on that spaceship. So in that conscious state of, wow, I'm somewhere else the large majority of my day, that's step one. I became conscious of that. I'm not present. So then my commitment began to be present so that I could then reconnect with my body in those moments. And after doing that, you know, for a long period of time, it wasn't overnight, the more I refocused my attention from the thoughts I was thinking or that spaceship that I was on, and I refocused it back on my body, even just using those points. How is my breathing? What is my muscle tension doing in this moment? How's my heart rate, right? So even using those points as an anchor for my attention, the more consistently I did that, the more I created a safe feeling in my body so that then I could get some clarity on what my emotions are. And I just wanted to, I was intentional around laboring on that point, because I think we shame ourselves if we don't know how we feel. I know I've been asked a million and one times throughout my 20s, 30s, or even early 30s, how do you feel? And I couldn't say. I didn't know. I was so disconnected from my body where my feelings lived.
And that's the most common question you get. How are you today?
How are you today?
And you say, yeah, I'm fine.
And that's another societal thing where we don't even just brush off. How are you? I don't even check in with myself. I just say, I'm fine, even if I know I'm not fine. Even if I do have access to how not fine I am. You know, so few of us are like, well, I don't know. How am I? Let me touch base, let alone sharing it with the nice stranger or friend who asks you how you are. Very few of us check in to see for ourselves, how are we today?
Yeah. So that could be the first question you ask yourself in the morning.
Yes.
How are you today?
It could be a great question that you ask yourself. How are you today? How is your body today? Maybe doing that quick scan of those three different areas.
So breathing and heart rate and
muscle tension.
Muscle tension. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Are there places where you feel tight, constricted? Our jaw is a great one where we're clenching our teeth.
Yeah.
For a very long time, I thought I had TMJ and all of the other kind of jaw type things because I carried so I wouldn't even notice that I was clenching for so long. So those are areas, and it might not be your jaw, it might be your back, your lower back, your neck, though muscles, heart rate, and breath are the systems that shift when we're stressed. And those, I think, they're the easiest systems that we can learn to reconnect with. And, you know, maybe putting a hand on your chest, on your belly, where is the breath coming from? I still to this day notice I will be holding my breath. If I check in throughout the day, and this is something to speak to the point too of what is helpful is to expand the amount of time we're practicing it. Yes, it's great to do it in the morning. It's also great to do it a couple hours later in the evening, right?
Yeah.
Consistently checking in with yourself. Because again, I think this is one of those areas where, well, I ask myself how I'm doing in the morning. I've checked my box and now I'm right back into that autopilot and I don't really care how I'm doing for the rest of the day.
Are we all like victims of our childhood, or are some of us more ready to just jumpstart the life without doing
the work. We will all carry our childhood with us, whether or not those habits and patterns are adaptive or dysfunctional, causing ourselves continued harm in our adult life is obviously an individual question. I think the larger majority of us are carrying some, you know, habits that don't serve us from our childhood for the simple reason that we're all raised by other humans, by humans who are impacted by the generations that they were, you know, born in, the circumstances that they were living, the socio and political context and context, you know, and factors that were contributing to how they felt. I mean, sometimes even theories about parenting. I mean, I cite this often because it shocks me to this day that there was a very long amount of years where we truly believe that children only had physical needs, that humans didn't really have, or emotions were just secondary and unnecessary, and, you know, just water them like a houseplant and they're fine. Through all of the, you know, limitations in access and education and resources, I think it's quite inevitable that some of us are carrying some habits that don't serve us. And then as children, we're greatly impacted not only by what our parents are telling us, though if their body is communicating something different to their child in that moment, if you're telling your child you're safe to express sadness and your body is actually in complete reaction because sadness for you was never welcomed, it was threatening, and you're feeling fearful in that moment of your child's sadness, then your child's going to pick up on your body's language, your body's energy. In addition to the fact that as much as we want to say, do as I say, not as I do, children are so much more impacted by what they're seeing you do. Now it's not about just delivering the right line when you're in front of your child and then secretly or in relationship with them doing otherwise. That's going to be what shifts their behavior. So saying all that to say, I have very rarely met a human who isn't carrying something that isn't serving them from childhood. Because in childhood, we had to adapt. We couldn't control our circumstances. So in ways, we were a victim to these environments that we were powerless to. Though in adulthood, we can really empower ourselves to say, that is part of our journey. I am conscious of that. And in that conscious state now, I can empower myself to make those new choices. So I no longer have to be powerless to my environment.
And you can be grateful for a lot of things also that your parents gave you.
I think there's a lot of, you know, I talk often about the strength, the resiliency that can come from and the humor. I like to factor that in too. I think a lot of valuable traits can come from struggling in childhood. So absolutely, I think gratitude can be part of it. Though, again, this is an area where I think some of us go so far out in practicing gratitude that we suppress the pain, right? Because we should be grateful because there was a roof over our head. I shouldn't feel sad that, you know, my mom was emotionally disconnected. When in reality, we can feel both things at once. We can be grateful for what we received and the gifts that gave us, and also allow space to grieve that which we didn't receive.
That's beautiful. So we have been talking about setting health boundaries, and we will talk more about emotional boundaries too. And one thing that you encourage us to do is play more. And I think I really struggle with that. How can I learn to be more playful?
So when we talked about the nervous system a bit ago, I left out one of the states of nervous system. So we talked about the stress response. I didn't necessarily share about our hypothetical normal, and I'm putting air quotes up right now, resting state, which is called the ventral vagal state of our nervous system, which I like to call just safe and social. And that feels like being grounded. I'm in my body. So as opposed to that spaceship that I was describing, I'm in my body. I can very easily feel, you know, what's happening in my body. I feel grounded. I'm in the present moment. I'm able to feel connected to the conversation that I'm having because I'm sharing presence. I'm feeling, you know, the emotions about what you're saying. And when we're in that state, and I left that out because I think very few of us spend very much time. I know I didn't. And very interestingly enough, what was lacking in my life for so many years was play. Because play can only become possible when I'm feeling safe. Because if there's a threat at hand that I might need to hypothetically fight, flee, or just shut down from to keep myself safe, play is the farthest thing. Play? What do you mean? I can't play. I need to, you know, prioritize my survival. And again, this might sound really like intense to be talking about survival, though that's what my nervous system. So when we're not in that safe and social state, the reality of it might be you might not be able to, not because you don't want to, but because your body is telling you that play is the farthest thing from a possibility, even the way you were describing it. I'm always, you know, on thinking about what I have to do. Like, I'm busy all the time. When we're in that busy state, play is not going to be accessible. So again, this is where I just want to emphasize how important it is to bring our body along on that journey to become aware that, you know, if you are noticing when you do those check-ins that we talked about, and or in the morning, you ask yourself, right, how am I doing? And you check in on those three systems. If more consistently than not, your body is sending you those signals of stress, your heart rate is always either elevated or you're always holding your breath, right? When you're getting that sense that you're always stressed, then play is going to be quite impossible. So learning how to regulate your body, how to shift it into that ventral vagal state so that over time, playfulness can become possible. So if becoming that little girl who was told to smile and be playful, now I have many moments of play, of joy, of ease, only because my body has allowed me to.
That's so interesting. And now please welcome Teresa, my beautiful colleague. I'm so happy that you could join Hälsorevolutionen today to share your insights of Nicole's
work. I must say I'm a little bit nervous sitting here because you've been such a great part of my life for the last couple of years. And you and your teachings basically have changed my life in many different ways. I just want to say that at first. So it changed the way I work, how I connect with people, setting boundaries. I guess you've already talked about that as well, but also play. I realized that I was working a lot of achievements all the time, both in relationships with friends, being a people pleaser, always making sure that everybody else was feeling all right, and also like professionally, and that I had to connect to myself and what I really liked to do as a child. And I loved to sing as a kid. So 2 years ago, I started to take singing lessons. And I did it only for myself. And I decided to start writing again. So I went on this trip by myself up to the north of Sweden for 4 days up in the mountains, writing Western. And I don't know how to say it, but it has really changed my perspective on myself and where I'm heading, and not just like surviving life, but actually living life. So thank you, really, from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
Of course, I'm so honored to have been part of your journey. And I want to acknowledge you, Teresa, because while I might have been the channel for this information, again, back to that, right, giving you that awareness, it's been you who showed up every day, actioning on that awareness, keeping those commitments to yourself, shifting your body out of survival mode. So I'm truly honored. Even those of us who have access to the greatest support in the world, you know, or the greatest professionals in the world, or the greatest tools in the world, really are limited by then how are we integrating that? So I think so easily we minimize the role that we've done as an individual of keeping those daily commitments. So I just want to offer to you appreciation for you showing up for you. That's incredible. I was getting chills the entire time you were talking.
Oh, me too.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So the question that I had, it's more about when you've gone through this process, or you're always in the process because you're never like done with it. It's practice. And you've changed the way you look upon things and how you engage with the world. And you feel that both friends and family, they don't really understand the new you. How would you, in the best manner, explain to people that you feel that they're not really in alignment with your new authentic self? How would you best explain that journey, or like the boundaries that you have to kind of express?
Yeah, I appreciate your question really speaking to this reality that most of us do face. When we come to the awareness that our old patterns don't serve us, usually many of the patterns really are integrated into our relationship dynamic. So simply what I'm saying is there's expectations that have been built for some of us over a lifetime of our core relationships with our caregivers, with our siblings or whomever that might be. There's been so many years of, you know, them expecting one thing. So it is at minimum going to be really surprising and jolting as we begin to emerge at the, as this new being with new choices and new boundaries and new things we're doing and therefore new ways that they're going to experience us. We are all embedded in systems. We're, you know, wired to connect with other people, we say kind of in the scientific, you know, sense of the word in terms of co-regulation, though the reality of it is we are all in relationship with other people at every turn. So when one part of the system changes, especially when it's a family system with more than one or two people involved, the dominoes really do begin to fall. And I actually just put up a post a couple of days ago around that statement of you've changed, right? As if it's loaded negatively with this idea that one should never change. Really what we're saying is you're not how I expected you to be. And now there is an impact on me. You're not going to play that role for me anymore. I can't do that thing. I can't anticipate you being there in the way that you once were. And now I feel some kind of way about that. So I think the first word of advice is to understand that people's reactions in those moments, the reason why I shared kind of that expectation, that violation, and then all of the kind of things that could come from that emotionally for this receiver of this new us, is because so many times we take that, especially if we're a people pleaser, especially if we're like you and I, always worrying about upsetting people, we take that personally. Right. When someone's upset with us, it's very natural and difficult for us to feel upset with ourselves, you know, to be upset that we've upset someone. So sometimes the greatest gift we can do is depersonalize their reaction. They're having their reaction because they've expected one thing, they've gotten another. If we, you know, depending on how close we know this person, if now we're being a little less available, we're breaking those people pleasing patterns. We're saying no, we have new boundaries. Now they might feel a bit abandoned, rejected. If they have some deeper wounding around that, then the reaction might be big, you know, from them. Though again, in terms of an emotional boundary, we don't have to take full responsibility for that. So we can depersonalize that discomfort, hold space for it, compassionate space for it, but we don't have to go back on our boundaries. We don't have to change back. So now to specifically how do we share it? I think anytime we can honestly communicate what we're thinking, what our perspectives are, especially as they're changing, how we're feeling, we can set someone up to do one of two things: choose to hear the truth and reality, you know, that we're sharing and accept it, or choose to hear it and have their own reaction about it. When we don't share what's going on, when we don't say, you know, I'm changing, I'm not going to be available in these ways anymore, or I'm thinking and feeling this new way, which might even be positive, whatever it is, we leave so much open for interpretation. Yeah. So if we don't do that, instead we just ghost someone or vanish or stop returning their calls, much like in childhood, that person's going to wonder what happened and their mind is going to create their own narrative about what happened. So anytime we can gift someone with our own reality, especially as it's shifting and changing, and especially as it's impacting how we're going to show up in the relationship with them, then we at least give them the opportunity to take what it is that we're sharing as the reality of what's happening so that they then don't have to personalize it themselves. Mm-hmm. However, again, we can't always control how someone's going to react, how they will interpret it. They still might misunderstand us. We still might have, quote unquote, changed in a bad way according to them. And that's really difficult. So I think a lot of these conversations, I'm saying all this, and it's really easy to say it simplistically, though in reality, the emotional nature of telling close friends this, of telling, you know, family members these things does bring up a lot. It's a very difficult, I think, journey. The journey of change in so many ways, because so much of our whole humanity, we love familiar. We love predictability. We feel in control. And that goes to our relationships as well. So while I think at our nature, we're evolving, changing beings, there's so much comfort we get in the habitual. There's so much comfort we get in the predictable. So as we begin to live into our evolving, changing nature, it's actually quite challenging for the other humans around us who prefer that predictability and that familiarity. We don't have the people celebrating us as we thought or had hoped.
Absolutely.
We will get here.
I actually, when I read your Instagram posts, I always go through all the comments as well, because then you get like, okay, I can see myself in that. Oh, that's interesting. It's really good for reflection. So
yeah. I'm really happy you shared that, Teresa, because I can easily share my story, right? Not everyone's going to resonate exactly, you know, with my journey, with my struggles, you know, with what I'm dealing with. And this is why my hope is too, by me sharing my story, is to inspire, and the community is incredible in that way. I mean, so engaged in the comments, so many vulnerable humans who are doing just that, sharing their portions of the story. So if you can't relate with mine, there might be people, and I love to hear that you are one of those who, and I think a lot of people are spending time in comments to find other humans, that point of connection, because what that really is giving us is that moment of, oh, wow, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
I'm not as broken or as messed up as I thought. All these things I was shameful of and hidden about, I'm seeing. And I might not even be the person who's dropping a comment in agreement. Sometimes just scrolling the comments to silently allow yourself emotionally to feel how it is to feel reading someone else's story that's similar. In that moment, we can feel the silent connectedness of walking the journey with someone else emotionally. And that can relieve, I think, the deep loneliness that so many of us live with.
This is like the best thing with social media. I mean, often nowadays you criticize social media of taking out time, which it does, of course, but there, this is like a very, very magic thing sometimes, I think, that you can feel the connection, not feeling as lonely. Thank you so much, Teresa. This was
thank you, Kelly.
Fantastic. This is
I just say another thing? You don't have to put this in the podcast. Just remove that. But last time you were on the podcast, I think it was during summer.
In August.
And Karina, she texted me saying that they were having you on. And I remember I was at home and I was like, no! And I sent you a picture of the book. And I was like, oh my God, this is my favorite. I'm so excited for this episode. And now I'm sitting here. So
and
you
manifested it.
Yeah,
look at that.
Exactly.
That's exactly what you did.
Exactly.
I have one favorite question from Maria, who's not here today, and that's about triggers in our daily life. All of us get triggered once in a while. What's the most important here when you have someone telling you something or looking at you in some way or just trigger you?
Yes. So triggers, and again, this beautifully, I think, ties together everything we've been talking about. When we become triggered, our nervous system, right? Mm-hmm. We're perceiving a possible threat, typically in our interpretation of the event or the lack of event or the happening in our world. It's because what our mind is doing, and again, this is something that begins in childhood, is we're always endlessly trying to make sense of what's happening, of our circumstances, of, you know, the world around us. So our mind is always assigning meaning and filtering things, not objectively, though we're assigning this interpretation of what's happening. So that continues then into adulthood. So something, you know, an event occurs and we run it typically through a very similar filter that we've learned from childhood. And then we feel that reactivity. And again, localizing that activation and our nervous system as part of the process is so important, because again, this is another one of those moments where we can't just say, well, don't let that bother you, right? Because my nervous system is bothered, right? And I think we all have had that experience of the point of no return, where you're like, don't say that thing. Yeah. And then they give you that one last look and there is no return. I've at moments been, have words coming out of my mouth and I have this voice in my mind that's saying, why are you doing that? This isn't going to end well. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
So our nervous system is directing or is part of the equation when we're talking about triggers. And again, saying that to say, to set ourselves up to work with triggers is that two-step process, going back to that, becoming aware of what are the moments, what are the stories or the interpretations that cause you that activation. And I'll share my most common one from a childhood where, in particular, my emotional needs weren't met. The most common interpretation in my childhood mind that I had was, I'm not considered, I'm not worthy of having these needs met, because I didn't have the maturity to zoom out and understand that my mom was incapable of meeting those needs because she was shut down to her own emotions. How could she connect and be safe? She wasn't safe in her own body. She didn't feel safe in our own, you know, circumstances that we were living. How could she right, be safe for me. I couldn't do that as a child. None of us can. So I assumed, as all of us will do in childhood, that we ourselves must be the cause. I must be not worthy of having these needs met, of, and the language that my particular brain used, because we're each different, is of being considered. So it's no surprise that as I begin to become aware of myself, to separate myself from the thoughts that usually distract our all of our attention, to really realize that we can witness our thoughts, right? We can be the observer. We can locate and be like, oh yeah, I'm thinking, you know, this thing in this moment. Practicing that consistently enough, what I came to find is when events happen or don't happen, my mind does run it through that filter. Oh, well, this happened or didn't happen. Why? Because that person's not considering me. Now it's understandable that I'm screaming, I'm yelling, or I'm refusing to talk to you for several hours or several days, because why would I want to talk to someone who doesn't consider me? Now my understanding is, I mean, my reaction is understandable. It's realistic. So again, having this insight and the awareness doesn't take away that filter, doesn't take away that reaction, but could take away the shame. So observing yourself enough, use, you know, kind of separating yourself from your thoughts. What are those common moments? When do you find yourself most emotionally upset? What did your mind say? What is the meaning or interpretation that you apply to that event?
And you're talking about a 90-second rule?
When I'm upset in anger, when I'm upset in sadness, physiologically, when we're talking about the neurotransmitters, the energy, the, you know, physiology that changes inside of us, they truly have a shelf life of about 90 seconds because then our body will metabolize them and return back to what's called homeostasis, balance, right? Mm. We don't want to have that high level of cortisol that comes with feeling stressed. Mm. It'll metabolize it and I'll go down to having a lower level of cortisol. Same goes for all of the emotions. Mm. What very few of us do, though, is we don't allow our emotions to live in our body. After that moment of not being considered, I don't just sit with the hurt that I feel so that in 90 plus seconds I feel less hurt. I ruminate. I sit in my mind and I stew about how I wasn't considered and how dare they. And, you know, I keep that emotion alive. So again, this really does drop us into when we think about and become aware of these narrative patterns that are associated with our triggers, it means that we then have to do something different with our body in those moments. As we start to feel the blood pressure increase when we're getting angry, or, you know, our hands start to clench when that look does happen and I'm getting ready to say that thing to the person who gave me that look.
Yeah.
If I'm conscious in those moments, I can now begin to pick a new choice. I can do some breathing. I can remove myself from the moment that's maybe too activating so I can calm my body down. For some of us, it means preemptively planning, not going and having difficult conversations that we know are going to be activating for us or triggering for us, or going to engage with relationships that we know are triggering or challenging or more likely to call up those old narratives when we're exhausted, when we're stressed out, when we are already on edge at an 8 or a 9, you know, and not going to be able to set ourselves up to allow our bodies to be calm and grounded in those moments so that we can respond differently. And I think this is sometimes where we just overstep our boundaries and our limits. And we just want to get it over with because it's on our mind. And then we end up having an escalated conversation and it's worse on the other side of it. So that might mean delaying the difficult conversation, limiting the time you're spending with activating or triggering relationships if you don't have the bandwidth. So don't have it or attend it if you don't have the resources or the bandwidth to keep your body safe and grounded. Because again, this is the moment where no amount of willpower of rehearsing the right thing to say when they give you that look is going to override. If your body's already locked and loaded, it's only a matter of time before you say and do the thing that you don't want to do.
And not just text something quick back or
pausing.
Just,
that's actually, Karina, really great. Yeah. You know, the pause. And I would learn, this actually beautifully again ties together, my people-pleasing nature. Anytime I was offered something or hypothetically, do I want to go to dinner on Saturday and it's Tuesday? Immediately out of concern of upsetting this person, I would say, yes, sure, jump into response. Similarly, if I got a text, you know, from my family or someone who needed me or one of these more stressful dynamic relationships, out of felt obligation. What will they think if I delay in my response? I'd immediately respond back. And typically when I'm responding in both of those moments, I'm giving them the answer that I think they want to hear. Mm. So I employed a pause technique somewhere in my late 20s when I started to realize that I was committing to things that I thought were a good idea, you know, for all the reasons on a Tuesday, that by the time Saturday came, by Friday night, I was so resentful of having to do this thing that I didn't want to do, that I agreed to do, that I was actually getting upset with the person who asked me when it was no fault of their own. They're excited about lunch tomorrow. It's not, I'm not excited. They're excited, and that's okay. So I started to integrate a pause where I would say, whether it's through a request, oh, I'll let you know, to give myself some time when I'm not in the heat of the moment of being asked and worrying and having all of this, like, what will they think, and all of my old stuff being activated, where I'm more likely to react in that old people-pleasing way, giving myself that buffer. Same thing goes with my phone. For a very long time, I would go to bed with my phone next to me. In case anyone needed me, I would respond, whip that response right back. So for me, and again, this might not be for everyone, it was a journey of, you know, creating boundaries with my phone, learning how to see a text come in and not respond right away, so that I could have a moment to feel how I feel about it. And then so I can increase the likelihood of communicating my true response, not just my people-pleasing habitual response that I'm used to giving.
Wow.
So the power of the pause, I think, really does go an incredibly long way.
That's going to be my mantra, the power of the pause.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Denna vecka har vi ett betalt samarbete med Bosch som precis har kommit ut med sin nya köksmaskin serie 6. Och jag har ju alltid älskat att baka och har tänkt att jag vill baka lite oftare eftersom det gör mig så glad. Och nu har jag hittat ett sätt som gör det både enklare och smidigare.
Vad kul! Och vad ska du baka för något?
Ja, men igår så testade jag att baka bananbröd som jag gillar väldigt mycket eftersom det även är ganska hälsosamt. Jag hade i valnötter och inte så mycket socker som det står i receptet. Och först tänkte jag att det skulle vara krångligt att baka med en bakmaskin, för det har jag aldrig gjort innan. Och jag skulle sätta ihop olika delar, trodde jag. Men så var det inte, utan jag känner redan att serie 6 är en pålitlig vän i köket, för det var faktiskt väldigt enkelt.
Ja, vi är ju lite lika där, Karina. Tycker ibland att det är jobbigt med för mycket bruksanvisningar av teknisk karaktär, men den här gången var det kul.
Ja, Bosch serie 6 är en väldigt snygg och cool köksmaskin, bara en sån sak. Den levereras ihopsatt och det är inte svårt att förstå hur man ska komma igång. Jag håller fortfarande på att utforska alla funktioner och automatiska program. Bland annat så har den smarta sensorer som gör bakningen enklare genom att den känner av när det du bakar har perfekt konsistens. Och därtill så har den en unik 3D-mixning som efterliknar handknådning och fångar upp alla ingredienser så att inget lämnas kvar i botten av skålen, vilket ju kan vara irriterande annars. Ja, jag får återkomma lite närmare till just den funktionen när jag bakar bröd nästa gång. Eller om jag ska baka kanelbullar, det var ju länge sedan.
Jag vet ju, det gillar ju du, det är ju väldigt gott. Och det här med 3D-mixningen låter ju väldigt spännande. Hur ofta funderar man inte på om degen verkligen blir genomarbetad när det står knåda väl i receptet, eller hur?
Ja, precis. Och för mig är det viktigt att det är enkelt att lyckas med bakningen för att jag ska liksom dra igång ett bakprojekt. Och jag tycker att serie 6 gör bakningen ännu mer lustfylld genom att den är så enkel att hantera. Det gäller bara att välja program och sen kan man luta sig tillbaka medan maskinen gör jobbet. Eller varför inte fixa köket medan degen knådas?
Låter perfekt. Bors nya serie 6 finns att köpa redan nu hos Power. Och där kan man även få mer info om köksmaskinen. Och vi återkommer snart med mer inspiration och berättar hur det går med Karinas vårbakning.
So we have a few more questions from our beautiful listeners. Ida writes: As a parent with 2 kids, 7 and 11 years, I struggle to balance my temper and to work with my inner child. I fall back into bad, unregulated feelings over and over. How can I explain to the children what happens? Is it enough to say I'm sorry? I think it's very hard to be a parent and to do work through this self-healing journey at the same time. What will my kids have to carry on?
Yeah, Ida and any other parents actually listening, I want to send such a note of, you know, compassion to each of you, because to speak to your point, Ida, it is a lot to raise a child, period, to be in care in that state of dependency, like we were talking about earlier, for another human being and their needs endlessly around the clock, 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Our societies are stressful. Parents aren't supported in the way that they need to be.
No.
Oftentimes they're living in their own survival mode, trying to make ends meet.
Yeah.
And when you hear conversations about self-care, let alone caring for your children, I mean, it's a tall order. So, saying all that to say, and I think part of the question was, do I just say I'm sorry? Those moments of what we call repair, of acknowledging, you know, the moments where we are maybe screaming or becoming dysregulated around our children or acting in whatever way that we want to avoid to act, those moments of coming back together in connection, of a parent taking, you know, personal responsibility and acknowledging that no action, right, of the child would warrant or should warrant a reaction of the parent. So taking ownership, it's nothing about you, right? Mom is trying, dad is trying, I'm trying to, you know, I'm doing something differently. I'm trying to navigate my own emotions. And yes, I did yell, though it's not a reflection of you in any way. Anytime we have those moments where, again, we give our children the narrative instead of allowing them to think. Sometimes I think we feel so shameful of acknowledging, even with our kids, that I was wrong. I shouldn't have reacted that way. That's something that, you know, I want to break the habit of doing. Instead, we just sheepishly act like it never happened. In those moments, our child's mind's going to create the story.
And so if they're, explain.
And if they're in those young ages, just like I was when I didn't have that maturity, it's going to lead back to them. You yelled because of something that's unworthy or wrong about them. So the more we can give them our truth, which isn't about them at all. It's about us and our own journeys. The more we're going to give them the opportunity to believe us, not to construct that your reactions are about them at all. And then not to de-emphasize, is it enough to just say, I'm sorry? I think that was a question. Saying I'm sorry, those moments of repair actually are what predict the security of an attachment or the emotional relationship. It's not about avoiding conflict, even with our children. That's not possible. You're two separate humans who are going to think differently, who are going to emotionally disagree in different moments, who are going to want different things that are going to cause each other to, you know, go without. There's going to be emotions and disconnection, and that's normal part of any relationship. What's more important is not to avoid those at all, is what happens next. Do you have the moment where you come back and you do apologize, you do take responsibility, you do acknowledge that it wasn't anything to do with your child, you take ownership. Now, not only are you giving them those moments of repair to build that emotional security, you're modeling how to take personal responsibility, how to repair in a relationship, and how to shift from that emotional reactivity to a much more grounded state.
So many good insights. And we have one more question here from Jennifer. She tells us she grew up with the two emotionally unavailable parents who always, still, need to compete with her. She struggles with not having the last word. She says, I tend to feel I give them right if I keep quiet and ignore them. How can I stop this and feel peace? Yeah.
So peace, happiness, joy, I can go on with all of the feelings, again, is really something that is internal. You know, as frustrating as like peace comes from within kind of sentiment can be, it really truly is. I think so many of us are looking for peace, especially in our family relationships with our parents, expecting that that peace comes when they just stop needing to be right, when they just stop, you know, needing to or get the last word, because that's usually what we're vying for, when they just stop competing with me to feel better about themselves. And unfortunately, they might not ever just stop. Right? So I think a lot of times what our best gift we can give ourselves is first become aware of those expectations that we have. You know, it's very painful. And in this process is a lot of grieving when you, you know, do want your parents to be differently, more emotionally available, less competitive with you, you know, allowing you to just kind of share your thoughts, opinions without needing to argue or get the last word or whatever it is. When you actually accept how they are, that they're not doing that, at least right now, now I've opened the floodgates to grieve, to feel all different type of ways about this reality. Though once I accept that reality, sometimes the greatest gift that I can give myself and those relationships are by removing those expectations, not expecting my parents to be different the next time I come over. They likely will continue to try to compete with me. Though if I don't go in hoping and wishing that they're different, I might set myself up to be able to navigate those moments differently. So it might mean, and it already sounds like Jennifer has some level of awareness of, I want to say the last word. I don't want to be quiet because I'm afraid, right? All of these narratives, right, are playing. If I don't say the last word, they'll think they're winning or already still playing, right? Accepting that all of that is those, that inner working, that inner narratives that we were talking about, yet your parents probably will continue to act the way that they are or react the way that they are. So we can accept, we have the awareness, it sounds like Jennifer is having, and it might mean not speaking, though we can remove the meaning that that allows them to win. Not speaking might be what allows you to maintain your peace. Removing the expectation, right, that they stop competing might be what allows you to return your nervous system, not overnight. I'm not going to be unrealistic here, Jennifer, but allow you to remove your stress, the wish that they're different, right? The worry that they're going to win, whatever that's causing you the stress, the more you peel that layer of the onion back, the more likely you're going to be able to enter that peaceful state yourself. So again, another moment where what we want to feel, I want to feel peaceful, I want to feel happy. So many of us, and I've done this myself. Well, that means that you have to stop doing this so that I can feel peace. Right? Or if I just find the right partner, that'll be what makes me happy. And the most difficult lesson that I continue to learn is peace, happiness, all of the emotional world that we could talk about is something internal to me. I have to find my way to navigate what's happening, to allow my feelings about it, and still to allow my body to return back to those feelings of peace, of joy, and of connection. It's not going to be someone else shifting or changing. It's going to be me shifting or changing.
So beautiful. And wow, I'm just sitting here feeling so grateful for all your wisdom, everything you shared with us today. Also grateful for our listeners sharing their worries and questions. So once again, in Swedish, Nicole's book is called Läk dig själv. And I can really recommend it to all of you. I think you will find something in there that can help you in your daily life. Thanks again, Dr. Nicole LePera.
Thank you, Karina. Thank you all for listening. I would be truly honored to continue this conversation with all of you into the future. I'm so grateful. So thank you for all of your support.
Ja, Maria, nu har vi återigen fått lyssna till Nicole LePera, som är ju en riktig världsstjärna. Och ja, det känns fantastiskt att vi har fått göra ett avsnitt till, eller hur?
Ja, hon, alltså en sak som man funderar på kring detta, det är ju, hon pratar om trigger points, liksom hur man ska hantera jobbiga känslor inom en själv. Det här var ju saker som folk gick till kyrkan med förut. Det här håller på att bli, det här med self-healing och gurus, det håller på att bli liksom en slags ny kyrka. Eller vad tänker du?
Ja, det är ju, så tror jag att vi kanske lite griper efter halmstrån olika gurus som ska hjälpa oss och berätta, men hur ska jag göra?
Ja.
Det har ju du märkt som författare också, ja, att du får så här, men berätta exakt hur jag ska göra, ja, vilket proteinpulver ska jag äta,
ja, på detaljnivå.
Exakt hur, ja, vilken övning är bäst. Det är klart att det är lätt att famla i den här hälsodjungeln, och då är det väldigt skönt att hitta kloka förebilder som kan hjälpa en. Och,
ja,
och vi är mer vilsna i det här informationsutbudet,
ja,
som vi lever i. Ständigt liksom avbrutna.
Mm.
Och så kommer det nya trender eller liksom nya böcker eller vad det kan vara. Så att det Nicole Lepera står för är ju också liksom lite back to basics. Och den hälsofilosofin generellt sett gillar ju vi. Du brukar prata om att man ska vara sin egen förälder.
Ja, nej, men det är ju hon verkligen. Mycket spännande intervju. Och vi kommer att höra mer av henne, känner jag. Hon gör spännande saker.
Mm.
Ja. Tack för att du vill lyssna på Hälsorevolutionen, podden för dig som vill utvecklas. Själsligt, kroppsligt, mentalt.
Och just vill ha den här inre dialogen och hälsodialogen och få nya infallsvinklar från våra spännande gäster.
Ja. Tack för att du lyssnar på oss.
Tack.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.